Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Cavs, a podcast. I am here with one evil genius, and my name is Nate Smith, and we're recapping. This is a podcast recap and a little bit extra.
Or a podcap.
A podcap. Or a repot. Nah, recast doesn't sound as good. So, yeah, podcap. We're recapping the Cavs' defeat of the Indiana Pacers.
Which was awesome.
132-117. Quite a crazy game. Cavs were outscored pretty significantly, 36-25 in the first, and then started turning it around, and then outscored the Pacers by 22 in the third, 40-18, and
they wound up with 75 points in the second half, which is kind of unbelievable.
That is a big number. And lots and lots of threes. The Cavs shot 36 threes and made 16 of them. Another underappreciated number from this game after all the free throw woes of the losing streak. The Cavs went 24-26 in this one. The only person that missed a free throw was LeBron, who went 6 of 8.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin Love, I got to look up the numbers, but he was 7 of 7 in this game. He was 11 for 11 in the Wizards game on Monday.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's been, I have to look at, I got to look it up because it's kind of an amazing stat. Like maybe he's practicing with Korver too lately, but
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, he went 5 of 6 against the Knicks, that's right. And then he weirdly didn't shoot. Okay, right, because he didn't play against Minnesota and Dallas. But, wow, you think that's – what is that? That's he's only missed one out of his last – what is that? I'm really bad at math right now. 16, 23. Like one of his last 24 shots. So he's 23 of 24 over the last three games.
Wow. And his ability to – manufacture points at the line, get the Cavs into the bonus, and then convert those is really, really an underrated aspect of his game that I don't know if I remember him in Minnesota being able to get to the line as much as he has been able to here.
Yeah.
He was more of a bully. He wasn't as smart, it seems like, with the way that he uses footwork and his head fakes and stuff to draw fouls. I mean, he is almost like the James Harden of post players right now.
Yeah. Well, when he's right, I mean, he only took like just over 3 a game in January, which was pretty low. I mean, and clearly he was suffering from the bad back and the food poisoning, but like, you know, he was averaging 5 a game and hitting 4.5 of those 5 and in December, and in November he was hitting almost 6 of 7, and this is averaging. Like he was really hitting a lot early on and then kind of tapered off with the back issues, but he really looks like, I mean, he's back to dominating down there, and that's a good sign, I think, for the Cavs to
especially when his
outside shot's not falling like tonight. He really, I mean, he was like 1 for 7 of 3 and only 3 of 11 overall, but he got to the line, and he did the other cool stat from this game, which is the Cavs were down 20, I think they were down 25 to 13 at the half, in rebounds. And then they wound up winning the rebounding war 39-38 by the end of the game.
Yeah.
And Love wound up with 10, so.
As did Tristan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they hit the glass in the second half, that's for sure. And they weren't a whole lot of rebounds to get because Kyle Korver went otherworldly.
He went Drano. I mean, the Cavs shot 55%, and then the Pacers shot 50%. So, like you said, there weren't a ton of rebounds to be had. But Channing Frye was pretty solid on the boards as well with five. And I've actually been really impressed. I felt like Channing's been a lot better in the last few games than...
He has been. He even had a really good block tonight, too.
Yeah, although, yeah, he didn't get credited in the box score. He was...
He shouldn't have. That was a terrific block.
Yeah, yeah, and the Cavs had several terrific blocks tonight. Tristan Thompson, that one block he had in the first half, his hand was above the square.
PG-13.
What'd you say?
That was R-rated on PG-13, I think I wrote.
Yeah, I mean, his hand was above the square.
Yeah.
You said it was NC-17 on PG-13.
No, I said that defense they were playing on PG-13 was NC-17. I got carried away with the metaphors, but yeah, I think I R-rated it on the block, but it was, man, it was filthy.
Yeah, and a commenter today, either today or yesterday, commented that Tristan is limiting guys to 45% from when they shoot inside the key when he's guarding them, which is pretty good. At the basket. So I'm not going to.
You need the rim protector. You got Tristan.
Yeah. Well, he's been protecting the rim.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like you don't need another one.
Well,
Tristan only had one bad play tonight, and that was the foul on CJ from three when he came out and showed him. That was about the only. It was really only the real lapse that I kind of felt. I mean, he and Kev were both the team high plus 19 tonight. So,
yeah,
you know, they were both just getting after it on the glass and on the defensive end in the third quarter, especially.
And not so much tonight, but the previous couple games, Tristan Thompson's ability to roll and finish on the roll has been a big part of the Cavs offense. And I felt like tonight, the Pacers were really trying to take that away from the Cavs, and that's what really
opened
things up outside. I mean, anytime you get 36 shots from three-point land and you make 16 of them, that's something the other team is letting you have. So
it helps when one guy hits half of those.
Well, right, because Kyrie and Kevin, between the two of them, went 1-for-12.
It's amazing to me that Kyrie was 0-for-5 from three, but he still wound up with almost 30 points, 29.
Yeah.
I mean, he just kind of, he was hitting, all, I mean, his mid-range game was just completely on point tonight. Like he was just abusing George Teague I think they also put, what's his name on him too? Ellis.
Ellis, and then a little bit of Rodney Stuckey too.
Yeah, he's really kind of disappeared, Rodney Stuckey.
Yeah, Rodney Stuckey had a big.
He used to kill the Cavs.
Well, he had a big year the last couple of years, and then he signed, I think, a longer term deal, and just hasn't been as good. I mean, I felt like defensively, the Cavs' game plan was let's take away Paul George. They really limited his touches. I mean, he only put up 19 shots in 38 minutes, and I mean, he had a great game, 22 points, six assists and eight rebounds. Miles Turner.
They kept throwing guys at him. Oh, I was going to say, they kept throwing guys at him too. Like it felt like there was always somebody coming to help on George. So you were right. Like they really tried to take PG-13 away. And, you know, they've been saying, you know, beat us with your shooters. And they, you know, they did pretty well in the, I mean, they were shooting 70% in the first quarter. And that CJ Miles was, I think he hit his first five threes or something like that. And, you know, he wound up 6-9 total, 7-11 from the field. But oddly, they led the Pacers in scoring with 23 but wound up with a minus 20.
Yeah, and, so and a lot of that was from chasing Kyle Korver around, or not chasing Kyle Korver around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and in case we didn't cover it, Kyle Korver, 8-9.
Oh, yeah, we got to spend, like, a whole, like, section on Kyle Korver, because Threesis lives.
Threesis lives, yes. Yeah, no, the subtitle of this recap is going to be Personal Threesis, so... in honor of Depeche Mode.
Yeah, I love that song.
Yeah, so yeah, Kyle Korver was, as I called him, automatic tonight. I mean, 8-9 from 3, 10-12 from the floor.
I mean, it was just there's On Fire, En Fuego, and then there's what Kyle Korver was tonight, which was literally just engulfed in flame. Like, I think LeBron was talking about him post-game, and he was talking about that one that he hit in front of the Cavs bench where he got that really high pass, and it almost went out of bounds, and he saved it, and then he, like, looked down at the floor, and he said and he had Glenn Robinson III, like, right in his face, and he just, with no hesitation, just raised up and shot this high-arcing shot that barely grazed the net. And that was that's the crazy thing, is that he hit some shots tonight that you literally just did you're like, I'm like, did that go in? Like the twine didn't move. It didn't rustle.
Yeah, and a couple times they ran him off the line and he just took like a dribble and then pulled up from 20 and just switched it. But I will say he got more wide open looks than you ever want to let Kyle Korver get wide open looks. I mean, he had nobody in his area code a couple times. And
well, Nate McMillan is no Vogel, right? Who used to be the Pacers coach. I mean, McMillan's definitely gotten them to play a faster and looser offensive game, I think. And, you know, he's been starting CJ over Ellis. I guess last month or so, and you know, it's really kind of boosted their offensive game. But you know, you mentioned Turner too. Like, he's been a really good force in the middle for them. But like all these young big men, he seems to really like to take the top of the key 3-pointer, and he doesn't hit it as many. I mean, he was 0-2.
No, he only took two, but he was not even close.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I see, you know, I mean, it's kind of felt like it started with Porzingis maybe. And then, you know, you see
Channing Frye, that's his spot.
Yeah. I mean, Boogie does it. Al Horford has become like that's his whole game now. Like,
the human catapult. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. But like, you know, Joel Embiid does, you know, that like kind of that's his part of his game now too. So I don't know. It just feels like, and you know, everybody's trying to stretch the floor as much as they can, and like more power to them. But Turner is a kind of kid that, like, if he decided that he just wanted to play in the paint and, you know, and really just kind of be a force down there, he could make a living. Something else. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he got to the line 8 times tonight, made all 8 of them. And,
yeah.
And you get the feeling they would be a lot better off if he spent more time down there.
Well, he only had 7 rebounds. You know, I mean, you would just think this guy would be a better rebounder down low, though. I mean, he's definitely got the, you know, he's got the height and the skill set and the motor to do it. But like, you shouldn't be getting out rebounded by your small forward if you're the center. You know, I mean, he only wound up with 7 boards tonight in 40 minutes, and you know, that's whereas they were really hitting the glass hard in the first half, or maybe the Cavs just weren't. You know, they were getting a lot of good rebounds too off of the longer missed threes that they were taking. But I was looking it up, and Indiana is like the 3rd worst rebounding team in the league, which doesn't make any sense to me, because typically they, you know, like in the past, Indiana's been one of the better rebounding teams, and they got guys like Turner and LaVoy Allen, and you know, Paul George is obviously a really good rebounder at his position. But you know, their bench is really not that good anymore,
and
it's fairly thin. You know, their backup bigs are like Kevin Serafin and Al Jefferson, who looks like he ate Al Jefferson. I mean, it's I don't know how the guy gets around. I mean, he hit a couple of buckets, but
well,
I mean,
we were remarking tonight that I was watching the game with my buddy Eric, And we were remarking that he looked like, so I got to find the actor, but he played on The Walking Dead and he's now in The Expanse. I'm trying to remember the actor, but he...
Somebody said he looked like Oliver Miller on the thread. That was kind of hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have to... well, I'll come back to that. But right. Yes, he
looked... It's going to drive you crazy.
He looked large and in charge. So. Yeah.
But back to Korver before we stray, because, you know, we have to bring it back to Korver, because, I mean, when you score more points than you played minutes, that's a good sign. That's a good achievement.
Chad Coleman is who I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Look, he very not thin. Let's put it that way.
No, portly.
Yes,
healthy. Yeah,
healthy. There you go.
So, I mean, Nate, did you? This is the Korver you. I mean, maybe not you, but
no, we no, absolutely.
See,
this
right?
is when they traded. Right? This is good Earth Korver,
right.
No, and so I made a I played devil's advocate a little bit. You know, what is the difference between Kyle Korver and James Jones? I think we saw that tonight because James Jones can't get that shot off that he got against Robinson, just, you know, elevating, and Korver, for his age, still gets a lot of elevation on that jump shot, still has a super quick release. I've been impressed with his team defense. He's not out of position very often. You know, he's gonna get burned at times in a one-on-one. Excuse me. But he was solid tonight, and he gets good rebounding position, I've noticed. Like, he seems to have a knack of knowing where the ball's gonna come off, and maybe that's just from being a really good shooter. But, sure. Yeah, not a liability on defense and just a guy you cannot leave open. I mean, he's just going to open up so many things for the Cavs. I mean, the Pacers left him open tonight, and he just destroyed him. And like you said, the Pacers bench, I mean, they just destroyed the Pacers bench tonight.
Yeah. Well, it was clear. I mean, once they had to get in the game, like – and once CJ Miles like lost his cheat code, then it was just, you know, it was like, oh, okay. Cause CJ missed like three in a row at one point, and then it was like in the third quarter, and then they just couldn't score. Then it was Paul George just forcing it both from three.
No, it wasn't that they couldn't score. I mean, they scored 117 points.
Well, they scored 18 points. No, I'm saying they scored 18
quarter,
points in the third.
Yeah.
I'm saying in the third quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the third quarter is when they started to go cold. CJ was missing him. The Cavs had cranked up the defense a bit. I mean, look, I really liked that Liggins got the start. I know he only got 16 minutes tonight, but to start both halves, he stole the ball on the inbounds pass. Yeah. And then like on the, he didn't get the bucket on the first one. They kind of wasted the second one. Yeah, he got an and one, and it seemed to really get them going. Like,
well,
just
they,
really kind of get
they
them.
They were down six. Up. And then they scored 5 points in less than 10 seconds to start the third. So that's always a good way to start any quarter. If you can just get a quick 5 points. They should do that every game.
So Kyle Korver, they should. Kyle Korver shot 40% from three in January after he got acquired by the Cavs, right?
Mm-hmm.
In February, in the four games he's played in February, he's shooting 50%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing. Like, and remember when that year it was his best year with Atlanta when he was an All-Star, didn't he average like 49 or 51% from three for the year? That's the guy we saw tonight. The guy we saw tonight was the guy that got, you know, you couldn't leave him open when he was a Hawk because he was deadly. And, you know, the Cavs had an answer for him in that playoff series when they put Shumpert on him and or Deli on him and just, you know, they
didn't leave him open.
Yeah, they wore him like a second shirt. And that's the key. You can't leave Kyle Korver open. And the truth is, you know, and hopefully this is this is, I mean, and he was interviewed, I think, and said that he felt like he wasn't quite there yet, but he was getting there, and then really good things were about to start happening. And you know, like, look at that and say, man, if you could put a lineup out there, granted they wouldn't do it much, but if you could put a lineup out there where you've got LeBron and four shooters of the ilk of like of Korver, Fry, JR, and Kyrie from three, like how do you defend that?
Or you know swap I mean? Like, out Love for one of those guys? Yeah,
sure. Or Love for Fry. I mean, that's you have the because Korver is tall enough to guard threes and even some fours. Like you can really kind of mix and match that and just have some real devastation from the perimeter. Man, I mean, I don't know how you could have really any more sharpshooters on this team. It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, and I actually, so LeBron James went out for a few minutes in the third, and they ran a lineup that I haven't seen them run a lot, where they had Kyrie, Love, Jefferson, Korver, and I'm trying to think of who, and Fry. And
right.
I was like, wow, that's an interesting lineup. But I mean, that was a devastating lineup because, I mean, Kyrie is an even better 3-point shooter than LeBron. And, yeah. And he was finding guys, and it was just like, yeah, they had no answer. The only answer was to try and outscore the Cavs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, because LeBron, when he kind of hurt himself a little bit, like tweaked his ankle a little bit, falling out of bounds on that play when he blew a tire going to the rim. But, yeah, that just, I mean, just how quickly, you know, I think we, it's funny. Like, I didn't realize how much I missed J.R. Smith until Korver started hitting these shots. Because you remember, like, you know, in the last two regular seasons where you'd have games where JR would just catch fire and it was just so much fun and Cavs could run off, you know, 12, 15, 18 straight points because JR was just ridiculously hot and, you know, that they would just blow teams out. And, you know, seeing them be able to do that with Korver is just like, man, it kind of spawned my favorite Photoshop tweet of the night that I posted, which is the Lethal Weapon 2 poster
that's fantastic.
Korver and Fry on it.
Although I don't understand why it's not Lethal Weapon 3 because they shoot
that
three.
Was the it should be yes, but that was the poster for 2. Like, I mean, and you're right though. Like, it should be 3, and I think the third one actually had Joe Pesci on the poster. So maybe they Photoshop in Kevin Love, Joe Pesci, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, who would you put for Joe Pesci? I don't know.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you'd probably go Kevin. But then in the fourth one, I'm pretty sure that Chris Rock's on the poster, so you could absolutely put Shump in for Chris Rock with the hair.
Absolutely, yeah. Although I think Shump's literally a foot taller, so.
No, of course. All these guys.
I mean, it was a fun game tonight, for sure. The last couple games have been fun. I mean, we haven't even touched on what, you know, top five all-time Cavs regular season game, that Washington game Monday night, was just tremendous. I mean, LeBron hits one of the best, you know, just answer threes in regular season NBA history, falling out of bounds off, as I noted, you know, Kevin Love makes that pass. Not only does he grab the make and throw it down the court real quick, there's maybe five guys in league history that can throw that outlet that accurately.
Did you see the Phantom Cam like replay of it that I posted?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that, and I think somebody commented, maybe it might have been Phil Hubbard, who commented, the ball just looks so small. It looks like it's like going into orbit when you look at it from that low angle. And I heard Windhorst talking about it today too, or yesterday on his the Hey Windy or whatever. But it's just amazing to look at and think about that. And it's plays like that where you're like, you know, and I don't want to get too much into it, but you know, you hear all the trade rumors or whatever, and you know, it's been rehashed to death by everybody this last week, and it just seems like it just when the rumors die down, they crop back up again. But You're right. I don't know. I don't know if there's another guy in the league right now that can make that pass.
Yeah. No. And the only like you guy said, maybe only five guys probably like, all time. And the only guy in the league that probably make that pass is the guy who caught it.
Yeah.
The only other guy.
Exactly. But like you know, when they compare him to like you go back, it's funny. Like you know, they talk about Kevin and Wes Unseld. You know how Wes used to do that. And if you haven't done, if you haven't gone back and looked at like some old footage of Wes Unseld doing that, it's kind of amazing. Like he really is. Like it's like Kevin Love is a, kind of the re not the not that Wes Unseld's dead. I don't think, but like he's like the reincarnated ball player that you know Kevin Love is what Wes Unseld used to be. Like it's yeah. It's pretty unbelievable. Just the ability to throw a ball that far, that high. You've got 25 feet in the air at one point. And that accurately to a place where the only LeBron could catch it. I mean, it was, you know, like the Browns fans probably watched the Kevin Love throw those passes and be like, maybe he really should try out.
Like the two best quarterbacks in Cleveland both played for the Cavs. I mean, it's the other guy that was threw fantastic outlet passes was Bill Walton.
Yeah, that's true.
Those were the guys, and it's amazing his ability, and I feel that gets overlooked a lot. Like how many you got to look at? It'd be great to count in a season. Like I would almost bet LeBron gets 100 points in a season off just you know cheap outlet passes by Kevin Love.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's just. It's ridiculous. And
I mean, guys have been cheating on it a little bit lately where they don't let LeBron leak out quite so often. Like they make sure they stay connected to him. So there's a few more that get intercepted these days, but man, yeah, when you're not if you let your guard down, that's a touchdown.
Yeah. Like well, time. And the great thing about it is when you do that to LeBron, well, now you're not getting as many guys on the offense. You don't have to worry about the other team getting offensive rebounds as much.
Yeah.
You know,
very true.
It's taking guys out of the play. Yeah, he was. That game was one of the best games. I mean, how entertaining was that game?
It was. It was so much fun, and you know, like, I mean, it was everything. It was kind of like it was built up to be because John Wall was on the record saying, you know, it was his most important regular season game of his career, and I thought that's kind of hyperbole, but. I guess when you really think about it, like John Wall's the guy that, you know, been an all-star that's gone through some tough times in Washington. You know, they've had their ups and downs. I'm not a big Scott Brooks fan, but it's certainly he's had them playing a lot better than Randy Whitman ever did. So, so kudos to him. But like, yeah, you look at that team and you're like, oh, you keep waiting for that year when Wall and Beal are both going to stay healthy and have great years and now all of a sudden like Otto Porter's the best 3-point shooter in the NBA at like 46%. And you know, they run off 17 straight home games, which I didn't realize this until after I looked it up, but I guess the Cavs were the last team to beat them on their home floor, which is the other reason why they were all hyped up to try to beat the Cavs. Cause they wanted to show them they could beat them in Washington. And I don't know. I think there's still, this still got to be Bullets fans or whatever, or I guess they were still the Wizards then, but you know, back in the Gilbert Arenas days and you know, the Jameson days and you know, Antoine and Tough Juice and all those guys. And who's the guy that used to be the Soulja Boy to LeBron's,
Deshaun.
Who's that guy? Deshaun Stevenson. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's still diehard Wizards / Bullets fans that remember that stuff and like they still boo LeBron because of that, the infamous crab dribble when he won game 4 or 5 or whatever that was that year.
Well, and that's you got to remember the Miracle Richfield team too. I mean, that's a rivalry that goes way, Wes Unseld.
Way back. Also, yeah.
That's a rivalry that goes way back. I mean, definitely. Definitely some juice there to that rivalry. And I listen to Washington sports a little more than I should because I listen to the Tony Kornheiser podcast a lot, and he covers them. And he got a lot of crap because basically earlier in the season when they were not playing well. He said, you know, they should consider looking at trading John Wall. And, you know, he almost got run out of town on a rail on that. And they have really turned it around. I mean, just their ability. And Otto Porter, they didn't even offer him a contract extension.
Yeah, and that's gonna be expensive.
Yeah, that will be expensive. But I feel like it would have been expensive anyway. So,
well, I think the reason they didn't was they were still holding out hope last summer that they were going to have a shot at KD because it's a hometown.
No, but the contract extension was – that deadline was well after KD had signed with – I mean, that went to October.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But still, I mean, I think they – it definitely felt like they were – early in the season they had some – we didn't get KD feeling sorry for themselves kind of hangover almost. You know, and I think it's really fascinating that the East has all of a sudden become this sort of hotbed of teams that were not doing so well early in the year that are now, you know, hard charging like the Wizards and the Heat. I mean, the Heat, I think the Heat won again tonight, or they were. Yeah, they won again. They beat the Bucks 106-88. Dion did not play because he rolled his ankle in the previous game, but Whiteside's been on a tear, and that team's completely turned around and they've won 12 straight now. And then you got, and even the Celtics, who were pretty lackluster the first month or two of the season, had a terrific January. And, you know, it feels like the East is starting to become, you know, almost aside from maybe the Warriors and Spurs, like, you know, the very top of the West, the East is getting a lot more competitive this year. And I think people are a little slow to come to that. And, I don't know, the East is not going to be the cakewalk that it always has been. I still don't think it's going to impact the Cavs much at all, but it's good to see them get tested by a team like the Wizards on a Monday night in January, in a kind of a game for the ages. I mean, it had very much the kind of vibe that, you know, the Kyrie, you know, what, 57 against the Spurs, know, that one year had, you know, where it was like, you know, because they lost LeBron in the overtime too, you know, so they had to really, and they were down, I think they were down 5 points or so when they lost him. So they really had to rally and do it with Kyrie, who was just kind of magnificent in that overtime period after not being
so. As was Kevin Love as well.
Oh no, Kevin Love was great the whole game. Like, yeah. I kept yelling for Kyrie in the fourth quarter. I'm like, just pass it to Kevin. Like, he's been hitting everything, and he wouldn't. But they both really carried the team in the overtime. And, you know, Korver hit a big three in, I forget, it was the fourth of the overtime. Yeah. And
off an offensive rebound by Kevin Love. Throw out to the, yeah, that was,
that's right.
Yeah. That was a phenomenal game.
And, I mean, they scored, it was 20-15 in overtime.
I mean, that's, both teams combined to score 40 points in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or I think 35 that's more points than, in 5 minutes.
I think that was more points than was scored in by both teams in any of the quarters between the Grizzlies and the Spurs on the same night. So, yeah. Speaking of the Wizards, they had to go to overtime again tonight. Well, this time against the Brooklyn Nets, but they did pull it out 114-110. So
no, I mean, this NBA season's really rounding into form, and there's so many phenomenal storylines this year. I mean, you've got Dion Waiters, you've got lunatic Phil Jackson, you've got you know, Utah. Eiffel Tower, you've got
did you see that? I posted that for you. Did you see that ball that the Eiffel Tower literally blocked to half court?
No, I missed it. You'll have to resend that to me.
Check it out on it's on the thread. I put it on the thread.
Oh, okay. I must have left already. Yeah, wow. I'm going to have to go check that out. So he actually blocked one to half court. That's fantastic. Yeah,
it was like a volleyball spike. It was crazy.
Yeah. And even out west, you've got teams that, I love the fact that, I mean, it's not good for the Cavs, clearly, because if more teams were just completely out of the playoff picture, the Cavs would probably have more
options
in the trade market. But
right. Or buyouts or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm loving just the nobody's tanking this year so far, it seems like.
No.
And that's a lot of fun. I mean, even the Mavs, when they had the worst record in the league, were not tanking, you know. And oh man, after that Cavs game last night, on Monday I turned it over to Mavs Trailblazers, and Dirk was like channeling Dirk from 7 years ago, and
it was amazing. And then it took the CJ McCollum shot to beat him.
Yeah. Canton's own CJ McCollum. Yeah. So
Canton's own. Well, look, the worst team in the West is the Phoenix Suns, and they're only seven games out of the eighth spot. So
that's a
wide open conference. There's literally, like, I'm looking at it now, there's six teams in the ninth spot, separated by like a half game or game and a half.
I don't feel like there's any nights off this year. Like, even though a team would come in with a losing record, like, you look at the Bucks are 22-29, and or the Heat's 23-30, and neither of those teams can beat you on any given night.
I think the only awful team right now is the Nets, because
the Nets and the
but the Sixers are almost to 20 wins. They're at 18-34, and they've lost their last five, but they were on a nice stretch there before. I guess Embiid's been having to sit out a bit lately because he might have tweaked his knee or something. But look, those teams aren't as close to the – well, I guess, the Sixers are only six and a half games out of the East. The only team that's, like, truly out of it right now is the Nets. So
yeah, and the interesting thing about this season, I feel like the Celtics could be really dangerous if they got a player like – And the question will be, will Danny Ainge finally part with some of that cash of assets, or is he going to try and get a transcendent player in the draft? You know, so.
Well, it's supposed to be a really good draft this coming year. So probably he wants to save, stockpile it for at least one more year. I just don't know. I was kind of going back and forth with Nomad the other day. You know, it's sort of like, well, who would they get? Because the Kings have come out vehemently, and said they're not trading Boogie. Now, who knows if that changes now that he's gotten his 16th tech of the year and has to miss the game against Boston tomorrow night. But they've said, I mean, Vlade Divac came out and reiterated, he said, we are not trading Cousins. We're going to build around him. And the truth is, there's really, other than Boston, or maybe,
I mean, the only guy I could really see him getting is Brook Lopez.
Would
be a real nice fit for them.
Yeah,
except
could be.
But why would
the Nets want to let them? You know, like maybe the Nets could get back one or two of their draft picks.
Right,
I guess,
right.
Of the like $5 billion that they sent to them. You know, for Paul Pierce and the gang.
Right. The problem is, the Brook Lopez doesn't rebound, and neither does Al Horford. So
no, Al Horford parks out behind the 3-point line. And
that's kind of what Brook Lopez does now. So
yeah,
I'm not quite sure what you're gonna do there. So
I think if you were gonna go after another big man, the guy they should target if they could get him prime loose, because he's a little bit of a redundancy and on a team that clearly doesn't. You know, could probably use a different kind of reboot. Is what's his name in Orlando?
Bismack?
No, the guy at the Thunder.
Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, Ibaka.
I could see a nice pickup for them, but so many guys now are talking about, you know, with the new CBA, the amount of money you can get. In addition, by sticking with your own team rather than going out and sign a free agent contract, I think you're going to see more teams stick with bad teams, or more players stick with bad teams.
Thank you, Ryan.
Just because there's much more financial incentive to do that now. I mean, it should be interesting. The other guy that they talk about with Boston is Jimmy Butler. I feel like they'd have to give away a King's ransom to pry away Jimmy Butler, but Boston would scare me with Jimmy Butler. I mean, Jimmy Butler is, you know, LeBron James, he's a baller, but Jimmy Butler is your father. So in the words of Froggy Fresh. So
yeah. I think they're going to hold. I think they're going to. I don't think they'll make the big move at the trade deadline. I think they might make a big move next summer, but I don't. I think right now, yeah, maybe at the draft, but I don't think they're going to make that move. I could be wrong. You know, maybe they'll do something stupid and trade for Paul Millsap, and then you know Tristan can abuse Horford and Millsap again in a different city. But
I've heard Mozgov's available.
Oh yeah, well maybe Cavs can get him back for on the cheap.
No, or well, no, not with that contract. It ain't gonna be cheap.
No, of course not.
I meant for Boston, but
that's an albatross, dude. Like, who would they trade? He's getting $16 million a year. He is Jim Buss's problem until they decide to buy him out.
I don't know. You forget Mark Cuban's penchant for overpaying big men.
I don't know. I don't know.
Cubes.
He hasn't done that much lately, though. He hasn't done that much lately, though.
No.
I mean, he would have if DeAndre Jordan had signed there, but he hasn't lately.
Yeah. So let's talk about some things that. So we all talked about some things we liked. Let's talk about some things we didn't like from the Cavs game tonight. I have to focus on Kay Felder and Kay Felder, who apparently
poor Kay. Poor Kay only played 6 minutes, Nate.
I know, but he set 12 screens. Like, his entire job was
he was
just
good at it, though. You pointed it out. He was really good at it.
He is good, but it's like, why would you run an offense around a 5'8" guy setting screens? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, he was setting screens for LeBron. He was setting screens for Channing Frye.
He had a really nice pass that RJ just didn't knock down the three on.
That he bricked.
That was a really nice pass.
It was.
And it was like a thread the needle, like quasi skip pass. It was good.
Yeah. I feel like if the Cavs could get a point guard, that second unit with LeBron running it would be really deadly.
Yeah. They tried out four guys and none of them got signed. So,
and I felt, yeah. And so you and I talked a little bit about, did they miss the boat when Shumpert got hurt? Was not on,
Lance Stevenson.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, here I have to look up. He played tonight. He got in the game for the Wolves. Here, let's see what happened.
The Wolves. I mean, what a bummer about
that. Not bad. I mean, he was 3 of 7. He played 20 minutes, 3 of 7, 6 points, 4 boards, 1 assist. You know, respectable.
Yeah.
+5. They got a win over the Raptors. That's pretty good.
Absolutely.
Towns and Wiggins went off, and Wiggins like did some weird like piggyback ride on Jonas Valanciunas when he dunked on one that I thought, yeah, he's probably gonna get punched after that.
Yeah, I mean, what a tragedy about Zach LaVine being out for the rest
of the season, but look, I mean, they weren't afraid to pull the trigger on a guy like Stevenson, and he actually might be really good for that team. I mean, if he'll listen to Tibbs, Lance is a pretty good defensive player too. So,
and he's
still young.
Yeah, he can play 3 positions, which is helpful. The Cavs, I really feel like they missed the boat there a little bit.
Well, he was willing to sign the 10-day, too. Like, how do you really go wrong with that?
Right, exactly. Just sign him to a 10-day. I mean, I heard one of the things was the Cavs were like, well, it costs us $200,000 to sign. And I'm like, you know, in a way, I'm starting to be like, okay, LeBron may have a point with this team starting to pinch pennies.
I mean, if you're not going to spend $200,000 on 10 days on a guy that could really help you, you know, maybe that's the fear. Like, he'll really help and then he'll help enough where it's like, well, we're going to have to sign him for the rest of the year.
No, that's not the way the 10 days. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like.
You could do like, can you do two before you have to sign him?
And then you have, I believe it's an option. I believe it's the league minimum after that, usually. So
right, which for the Cavs would be the league minimum plus $2.50 on the dollar, right? So
yeah, it would be $1 million. But this is also a team that bought the draft rights to Kay Felder for $3 million. So
because Dan Gilbert used to go to his games and was like, "I love this kid."
Yeah. Well, because they're the same height.
Man. I'm not sure even Kay is short as Dan, but
well, it's fun to pretend.
Yeah. We can dream.
We can So I don't understand. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, what you gonna but you just feel like because he was misused, you thought that was bad. Not necessarily his did you feel his play was bad?
No, I didn't I guess I just don't but they don't let him handle the ball. So it's like, yeah. Well, what are you doing? You know, this is just kind of silly.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, if you're going to have – look, in a perfect world, there'd be a few more blowout wins that where the starters didn't have to play in the fourth quarter, and that would be Felder time, and he'd be getting his experience.
And that is another complaint. They let them cut it to 7 after being up almost 20.
Well, that was just – I think they just got – again, that was a – it's a common theme with the Cavs. They get – once they get up by a decent margin, they get complacent. And the defense – you know, the closeouts aren't there. They don't stop guys in transition. I mean, the reason they got as close to 7 points down from like 14 or 15 just –
No, I think they went all the way up to 19.
No, they did. But at the time when they went on the run – you know, it was the – but it was, you know, it was like 3 consecutive layups from George Teague, Paul George, and I think it was Monta Ellis. So, yeah, I mean, that's typically what winds up happening. Either that or they just leave some guy uncovered from the perimeter like Brandon Jennings and the Knicks come back, you know, and you're just like, you know, what's happening? And – you know, I mean, that's sometimes Ty seems to let, I mean, he says it. He likes to let the guys just play through it. Doesn't like to call the timeouts, you know, all the time.
Well, that's a Phil Jackson thing. I mean, he learned that from Phil. Phil was kind of famous for, you know, you got to let these guys figure it out. Because I'm not always going to be there to call timeouts, but
they usually do. But sometimes, I mean, look, I've been outspoken recently about, you know, I was giving him a pass for a long time, and I've gotten to the point where, you know, he's won a championship. He may win another one or several more. But for me, my Ty Lue pet peeve is this sort of like weird refusal to form rotations that make any sort of sense. And, you know, and then obviously, I mean, I don't usually pile on the minutes police, but man, Windhorse has been banging that drum for a while now, just especially with LeBron's minutes. But, I think, you know, it's funny. You watch how good the guys played, like when LeBron was out tonight, when LeBron went out in the overtime, these guys can play good ball when they want to without LeBron. Maybe they can't win a whole game without him because they don't seem to do well there, as the record will state. But I don't know. I think there's more talent there than is being, you know, always utilized, or you know, maybe the effort's just not there. But it certainly seems like now is the time as they go into the get close to going to the All-Star break to really take a hard look at, you know, him making good on what he said, which is, you know, tapering LeBron's minutes down so that he can be as rested as possible for the 2 months of the or 2.5 months of playoffs that are coming. So hopefully.
I have seen finally a change. They are not running LeBron the entire fourth like they used to. They're giving him like a 2 minute break, 2 or 3 minute break from like the 6 or 7 minute down to like, you know, the 4 or 5.
Which is smart. That's a good, good start.
Yeah, because he was clearly just running out of gas before, and they're doing it at the end of the first half too. It's like, but I just wonder why it took, you know, half a season to figure that out.
Yeah, you know? Well, I think the answer, if he was really being honest, the answer would be the JR injury. You know, Kevin's back. Like, you know, again, it was all these little things that happened along the way that. Where you've got fewer guys that you can count on. I mean, because JR would actually play some, you know, I mean, he would actually play some three, or at least guard threes.
flashy. He did a little bit of ball handling in the half court. I mean, they'd put him in pick and roll every now and again. So
I mean, he's probably, you know, for a while there, he was a lot more reliable than Shumpert was, for sure.
Yeah. And Shumpert, before this last game, did a very good job. And he kind of – there was an article about it basically saying he simplified his game a lot. You know, drive, shoot, or pass, you know, offensively, and don't get too nuts with the ball.
Yeah.
And it's helped a lot. I mean, it's not rocket science.
No, for sure. But it was good to see – look, it was good – Felder only got 6 minutes tonight. But it was good to see Liggins do well in the starting role. He was 3 for 4. He hit one of two. Hit a really nice three-pointer. And his other one was just in and out. Like, it wasn't a bad miss. And then Jordan McRae actually had a good contribution tonight, too. Like, he was 2 of 5, hit a couple of really nice threes off of passes from LeBron, had a couple of assists, had a block. So, you know, he played 14 minutes, so – you know, guys are getting a few more minutes at least. I mean, you know, starters
and the Cavs bench definitely outplayed the Pacers bench. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Pacers, that's the big reason why the Pacers, you know, once you get past that starting lineup, aren't you know, there's really nothing all that scary about them. And it's nice for the Cavs to have, I mean, they'd lost something like 12 of their last 13 at in Indy, and it's just a tough place for them to go play. I think a lot of times, though, that it's, for whatever reason, it just happens to be the game that LeBron sits and takes off. So,
yeah.
I mean,
they seem to schedule the Pacers road games around back-to-backs a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we saw one earlier this year, and then that was the one that everybody complained LeBron sat. And they bought tickets to, and then we saw it last year. It just seems like one of those weird teams that they always schedule strangely. And maybe it's because, you know, it's not a long flight for the Cavs, blah, blah, blah. But
they have not played
it well on the road there.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised, though. I thought, well, if there was ever a game of the front end of a back-to-back to rest LeBron, it was probably this one. But he played. But then after the game Ty Lue said that he was very likely going to rest all three guys tomorrow night.
And I'm sure the NBA is thrilled about that. I was saying
on the third, like maybe TNT will like switch to cover a different game, because watching basically, you know, Russ Westbrook and his depleted lineup take on DeAndre Liggins and Channing Frye and Tristan. Like, I mean, Tristan will probably start and, like, you know, play a couple minutes so he keeps the streak alive. But then it'll be the you know, the all backups game. So who knows? Maybe Corbin will, you know.
I don't know if you can sit that many guys, because they only got 11 guys. So are you going to run a game with only 7 guys? That's not very fair to them either.
Maybe they'll have to sign a guy to a 10-day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they'll just bring up Moreland and the Mighty Quinn from
the Mighty
Kansas.
Quinn as Nomad often touts them.
Yeah, which they both made the All-Star, the D-League
All-Star team, yeah. And there was a nice article in the Canton Rep the other day that basically says, what has Quinn Cook got to do to get an NBA shot?
Did you go see that game the other night?
I think I had some basketball issues with my own kids, so.
The ongoing Coach Smith saga, right?
Hey.
No, I'm kidding, sir. So how far do you live from the arena? Oh, do they
probably 10-15 minutes? I mean, it's just
So how many do you try to go see a few Chargers games?
I've never seen one.
Come on.
I know, right?
I need to go.
I keep, like, they don't always advertise it that well, and then I keep meaning to go, like, catch Kay Felder on an assignment or whatever.
Right.
No, I have gone to a game. I went to a game at the end of the season last year, and then LeBron was actually courtside. It was the one that they sent Sasha Cowell
and
Jordan McRae down.
When LeBron was in his Indians jersey or whatever it was?
No, he was wearing, like, he was dressed like Frank Sinatra, but...
Okay.
But he was there, and Coach Drew, Larry Drew, was there because his son was playing for the other team, and and Ty Lue was there as well. So it was kind of fun. Yeah, no, it's a great time. I I'd like to see Moreland play because he intrigues me, but I don't know if a big man who shoots 35% from the free throw line can ever make it
Well, you never know. Corver could help him.
Maybe Corver can push him up to 60%. So
yeah, never know.
Yeah, you never know. So we had some other stuff we wanted to talk about. So I know the one you are avoiding like the plague is the whole, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Love debacle, which I think is just a completely manufactured controversy at this point.
Well, it's just, I mean, it bums me out. I wrote a little bit about this on the thread the other day, and it was the beginnings of maybe, you know, an article. I don't even know if it would be an article, but the thing that bugs me more than anything in life are the quoting of unnamed sources. And I feel like sports journalism in particular has really taken way too much liberty with that. I mean, look, unnamed sources are unnamed sources. Obviously, there's always sensitivity, and, you know, typically it should be because you just don't want to be, you know, lose your job or get targeted for something or what have you. But it was, you know, I mean, typically newspapers back in the day would want at least two or three corroborating sources to run with a story like that. And now it just feels like guys can run with anything, and they can be wrong and it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like it has been going on for a while now, but you know, I lose a certain amount of respect for reporters that kind of, you know, lean on that repeatedly. And you know, if it was the first time that Frank Isola had sort of gone on record and talked about this, that'd be one thing. But you know, he and Brian Scalabrine have their own radio show where they bag on LeBron, and they've the last 3 years he's reported that Kevin Love's going to get traded to the Knicks for Carmelo. It's enough already, man. Like there's no story there, and quit right. trying to make there be one. You know, it's just go. You got plenty. Look, go cover Charles Oakley getting tossed out of
that was the front page of ESPN. I can't wait to read about that because that was a bizarre scene.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, and look, I get it. Like, the Cavs are one of only three teams that they could trade Melo to with his no trade clause. You know, the others being the Clippers and the Celtics. The Celtics don't want him. They've made that pretty clear, which on one level I get, but on the other level, and I know they need more rebounding, but the thing is, Melo would actually be, might actually be a pretty decent fit there. And if they could, like your trade where they say, well, give us Melo and Kylo Quinn. You know, and then you got somebody who, you know, is almost as good as Tristan or maybe better to get your rebounds, and you still got Carmelo to be your playmaker, so you don't always have to have the burden be on Isaiah. You know, I actually think Melo would be a pretty good fit in Boston, but what the hell do I know? And the Clippers seem desperate. They like desperately want him, but they just don't have anything they can trade because they won't trade CP3, and they can't trade Blake because Blake can't play on the same team as Derrick Rose because something like – I forget. It's like the – you know, like the
– oh, yeah. There's
Windows
a weird
explained
CBA
it or whatever.
Thing. Yeah.
But you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we'll trade you Jamal Crawford and you
and
know,
Austin
and Doc's
Rivers.
And yeah, Doc's kid and, you know.
Well, and the funny thing is like you would think you know, Phil Jackson would want to generate the most value for him. He may have to give up a first round pick to get somebody to take him.
Right.
And plus, I mean, it just seems like a no win scenario. And then you get these weird sub tweeting from him, and it's just not a good look. And you know, it's not a good look when, you know, Carmelo Anthony, you know, he of the snitches get stitches video, from back in the day. He's the one taking the high road, you know?
Yeah. He's the one – somebody said that today. Like, he's the one who has to answer for the president of his team when it's usually the other way around. When the player says or does something stupid, it's the president of the team that has to come out and make a statement. But Carmelo's had to make these statements all the time. I actually feel kind of bad for Melo because he's in a bit of a no-win situation. I mean, he loves New York, clearly. I mean, he's gone on record to say that. He loves that his kids are growing up there and his wife loves it there. And, you know, he just loves playing basketball in the Garden. And, you know, he doesn't seem – and I'm sure he is deep down, but he doesn't overtly seem like the guy that's driven to win championships. He seems like the guy that really likes playing in Madison Square Garden in front of – Knicks fans, and sure, he'd like to win, but you know, maybe winning isn't everything. And
yeah.
I just don't see him winning a ring until after he's on the decline. Like he'll be that, like, you know, the 35, 36 year old version of himself going to join a team on a, you know, on a 1 year deal to try to help him win a championship.
Yeah.
Or, you know, come off the bench for some instant offense or something.
And yeah, and it's almost like he's getting castigated for not wanting to form a super team. You know, after all these everybody, you know, gnashing their teeth over Durant and over LeBron and the axis of ego down in Miami, and it's like, well, I just want to play for the team that signed me, and now, oh, what kind of sap are you? You don't want to compete. You don't want to go form a super team somewhere. And it's like, well, what? Everybody wants to have it both ways, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and he really has. I mean, look, Phil Jackson, he was a great coach. He is not a very good GM.
No.
And you look at his track record. I mean, look, he basically gave J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, who were two key rotation pieces on a championship team, to the Cavs. What did they give up? Lou Amundsen and the pick to OKC.
Gave away a first round pick to do it.
That's right, he did. God, you have to think about that. And then look at it. I mean, the coaches that he chooses, the him forcing the triangle on these guys.
Well, I actually don't think Jeff Hornacek is a bad coach, but
he wasn't a very good coach in Phoenix. Let's be honest, but he's not as bad as the team is right now. Yeah. The problem is, your two big offseason signings are a broke down Joakim Noah, who never had an offensive game to begin with.
But he went and visited Phil Jackson at his ranch in Montana a few years ago.
He was only ever good at rebounding and defense. And after the knee injury, in passing, but after the knee injury, all he's really good at is passing. So
and bagging on Cleveland. Those are his, like.
He's even kind of quieted down on that front lately, but you sign him for a 4-year, $72 million deal. You're never getting rid of that deal.
No, like, no, that's going to be an amnesty. That's going to be a buyout.
Yeah. And then same. And at least Derrick Rose, they only had for basically, he can opt out this summer. So, you know, Rose could still can and will move on next year and go somewhere. But you know, like, what are you left with? Like, you're just building the team around Porzingis, who's a great young piece, but he even seems to have regressed this year. I mean, the numbers are pretty similar, but you look at his game, like, he's really been foul-prone lately, and he really doesn't, you know, he just doesn't seem like the same kind of, you know, he didn't sort of have that sort of same-looking energy that he did last year. But, you know, that probably because the losing is getting to him and the rumors of Melo are getting to him, because he seems, by all accounts, he seems to like playing with Melo. But
that whole organization is a gong show.
I mean,
From Larry Dolan and what's the name of his band? Cheap Shot or something.
Cheap Shot. I don't know, man. Look, the Knicks fans want it to be good, but it hasn't been good since 1973, and it's probably not going to be good anytime.
No, they were good in the 90s.
That's true. But did they ever get to the finals?
Yeah, they did. They had that Jeff Van Gundy team that.
Oh, that's right. That's
eighth
right.
Seed
right.
Made the finals.
That's right.
And then got waxed by the Rockets.
That's right.
But
that's true. They did have the Ewing John Starks era, but
yeah, hey, that was a fun era. And
it was,
you know, it was running somewhat concurrently with the Cavs, Larry Nance and Mark Price era. And yeah, there was those were fun teams, but they have not been relevant since.
Yeah.
And have had some bad teams. I mean, and this latest incarnation just seems especially, Phil Jackson has just not a good fit there.
Yeah. I wonder if they could trade Melo to Brooklyn for Brook Lopez. The salaries almost match, and I think you could sell Melo on that. Like, look, you're still in New York, dude. You don't have to really move. You're just across town. You're playing for the Nets. You can be the star of that team. We can build around you there with you know, young talent or whatever.
With no draft picks and
with no draft picks.
You can get anything you want from the Russian mob, you know.
True. You wouldn't have to leave New York, that's all I'm saying. Like that might be a way they could sell him on that, and then and I think the salaries work, so
they could possibly do that. That's not a bad idea. I mean, he just seems to just want him off the team. And as we talked about, what was it, the ESPN poll, something like 89% of people thought
89% of people said, keep Kevin Love over Carmelo.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Like when, and I on some level, I get the argument that some of these, you know, more the former players that populate TNT and NBA TV or whatever are saying where they're like, well, you know, maybe not right now, but Melo will be a better asset to have in a playoff series because he can score in the half court. He, you know, he can create his own shot.
What has Melo ever done in a playoff series? Nothing.
No, but he's never had a team where he was that he was on with
Denver
with LeBron and Kyrie. They weren't terrible. They didn't have LeBron James or Kyrie Irving. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that's the point they're making. And on some level, I get that point where, you know, look, Kevin hasn't been great other than game 7 of the Golden State series, right? I mean, he's only really he missed the first go around, and the last year it was tough. I mean, he got the concussion in what, game 3, and then they wound up coming out and or was it game 2, and then they like blitzed him in game 3. So, you know, and then he was back in game 4 and they lost. So I mean, you know, look, it or he came off the bench or whatever, but I think you look at that and say, you know, you can, if the Cavs are only looking at the finals matchup with the Warriors, maybe you could make the beginnings of an argument. But I still, look, Kevin Love's, what, like 4 or 5 years younger than Melo. Oh, he's on a better he's on a better contract. He's a 2010 guy. He showed you Monday on Washington when he gets in that 34-point quarter that he had earlier in the year, you know, first quarter, he shows you just how insanely hot he can get. I actually think he's a better open three shooter than Melo too. So really only comes down, and I actually think he plays better defense than Melo, and he's certainly a better rebounder, defensive rebounder than Carmelo is
too.
It's so
hard to pick one thing that Kevin's doing now. I mean, I guess the one thing that Melo can do is score off the dribble in isolation better than Kevin Love.
Right. Cavs have two of the best guys in the league are doing that. Maybe the two best guys in the league are doing that.
There's nothing else that Carmelo Anthony does better than Kevin Love. The only realistic trade that you think is a terrible idea, and I'm coming around to your way of thinking, is that, you know, that Tristan Thompson and Amon Shumpert.
Then you have no center.
And you've lost a wing. You've traded your best defensive wing for one that doesn't play defense.
And your best defensive center for one that, you know, uses the force and is all emo.
I love that you've changed his name from Kyle O'Quinn to Kylo Quinn.
He was asking for it.
He did nothing. He does not deserve your hate.
You put him in my crosshairs, Nate. It's over.
What
be known as Kylo Quinn.
What is the order from Revenge of the Sith, Order 43?
What is it, 43 or 62 or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not enough of a Star Wars whatever the acceptable term is these days. I'm not enough of one to know exactly what that order number is.
So anything you want to touch on? Anything the Cavs, you think they're going to make a trade? You think?
I don't think so.
Or a significant roster addition?
I don't think so. I think they'll look at guys on 10 days. I just don't see what kind of value they get back. I mean, the one guy that they've, the two guys that they've, that they've most talked about from a, just from a trade perspective, have been both been point guards, and that's Deron Williams and Calderon from the Lakers. But I think both of those guys, I don't look, I think Calderon could get bought out. I don't think Deron Williams is getting bought out, because think, like you said, I kind of was poo-pooed the idea that the Mavericks could make it back in, but clearly they've been playing better of late, and you know, so they might make a nice run there. The Mavs have the other guy that the Cavs are probably zeroed in on, which is Bogut. But again, I just have a hard time seeing Mark Cuban buying out Andrew Bogut.
Why?
You know, because he knows. Just because I think he knows.
No. Why would you do it?
And I think he knows one of these guys would pick him up. He knows the Cavs are desperate to pick him up.
Yeah.
So why would he do it? I think he'd probably say, "Oh, you want him? You should trade me something for him." So,
I don't see a lot of needle movers out there that the Cavs can realistically get.
No, the one guy I'd love to see them make a small trade for, if they could, just fit into an exception. If the Pelicans would do it, I would love Tim Frazier on this team. I think he's not playing at all in New Orleans, and I mean, he's like buried on that bench. I don't think he's played in the last like month and a half. So, other than maybe like a garbage time minute here or there, you know, they've got, I mean, look, maybe they're holding on to him because they might be trying to move Drew Holiday. There's been rumors of that, you know, he might be on his way back to Philly or a few other places, but you know, and then you'd want to have a guy like Frazier in reserve because he played really well when Holiday was out earlier in the year, and then when he got hurt again for a week or two there. But he's one of those like guys you're talking about. Like he's a pass first point guard. He's got some speed. You know, he's not super short. I think he's like 6'6", 6'1". But he plays a pretty good on defense too. I got to see him play live against the Bucks, and he actually did a pretty nice job on Delly that game. Not that Delly takes a whole lot of guarding, but he got into him, didn't let him get off a 3-point shot. But I don't know. I really like that. And he's a young guy too. I think he's only like 24. So
yeah, my opinion is
I'd rather not have I'm with him. I don't want Mario Chalmers if he's not healthy from a, you know,
yeah, recovered from Mario's giving him anything, but
well, he's 32, right? I mean, it'd be nice to have a guy that can't just get blown by some of these, you know, second unit point guards. Most of these teams have second unit point guards that they just drafted, or, you know, in Dallas's case, picked up off the D League, like Yogi Ferrell, you know, and they turn into like, you know, instant fantasy superstars. But, that's the only thing I see them do. I think, Wouldn't kill him to, hey, give Quinn Cook a tryout. To your point about Moreland, maybe he's not a good enough free throw shooter.
Yeah, or you know, Briante Weber just got signed by the Warriors. I mean, the Warriors are standing pat.
We'll see if he plays. I mean, you know, he only signed for 10 days, so he may be back in the mix shortly. Yeah.
So I feel like the Cavs need a big body and they need another guard. Just because, you know, if you look, if they've got a cushion going into the playoffs, they literally can't rest guys because they can't just forfeit games. They are only going to be able to dress like 7 guys if they want to rest all their starters. And, you know, that's you've got to at least play guys, you know, then you risk destroying your bench. So you got to have some end of bench guys that can actually play. So,
oh, for sure. For sure. But there's not a lot of those guys you can trade for right now.
No, and probably, but you even can sign a couple guys.
But even as you get close to the trade deadline, it just doesn't seem like there are a lot of those guys. I mean, look, I could be totally wrong, and Dave Griffin might have like 3 different deals in the works right now. But something tells me he and LeBron had a sit down, you know, had that sit down after all that went down, and he said, look, man, we will do what we can to audition guys, but you know, I think when LeBron said this isn't fantasy basketball, I think
That came that's straight out of David Griffin's mouth.
That's David Griffin said that to him, and he was just he was annoyed and parroting that sentiment. I think that's probably what they've said. So
well, and I think the other thing David Griffin probably said to him was, I realize that your window to win a championship is short, and that you're at your prime, but we want to be there for the next 2 or 3 years. We don't want to sacrifice the next 2 or 3 years to put all our eggs in one basket for this year and then just have nothing, no flexibility in future years and, you know, be scrambling again. And, you know, we're going to do what we can, but, and I also think Dan Gilbert just doesn't want to spend the money anymore.
Yeah,
so.
Probably. Although, I mean, look, I think he would if the right guy was available. I really do. I just don't think the right guy is available. And why trade from a position of weakness if you don't have to?
Right.
You know, when you can just sign, there's plenty of guys that could sign on a 10-day that could be an extra body, you know, just to put in with the second unit that can actually just dribble. All you got to do is dribble and pass the ball. You don't have to even hit shots. Just, you know, be a guy who can, you know, who LeBron can trust enough so he can play off ball and occasionally be a role man. But you know, we'll see what happens. I think after that sort of week and a half of really
malaise.
Sort of down energy, most of which, by the way, came because of injury. I mean, yeah. You know.
And missed free throws.
Well, that too. Injury, missed free throws, odd rotations. And the
post-holiday blues.
Post-holiday blue, January doldrums. And now we're out of January. And ever since the calendar turned, it feels like a whole different team. They're back on the upswing. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, you think they play strong into the All-Star break?
I've been impressed with them this short little thing, or the short little stretch, but I mean, they still have some tough stretches in their schedule coming up. I mean, of course, they've got the two Golden State games out of the way, but let me see. So they got the Thunder, and then they have Nuggets, T-Wolves, Knicks, Pacers. So it's not like going through March, their schedule is that crazy. It just, you know, maybe they do. I mean, I their schedule doesn't look too bad right now. So they're going through March. Sorry, I'm babbling.
That's okay. How many games do you think they have to win to secure the number one seed in the East this year?
So they're 36-15, which leaves about 31 games. I feel like if they win 20 of those, it's probably a lock.
So 56 and 20. What's that? 56 and 26?
26, yeah. Would probably do it. And you know, give or take a game or two. But
who's the two seed in your mind when it's all said and done?
Wow. It's going to either be Boston or Washington. And they're going to have to fight it out for that. I mean, I didn't see Washington coming, but they are really playing good basketball. And I just don't see anybody else in the East having the juice. I mean, the Hawks just aren't that good.
I think the Raptors are going to come back. I think they've been on the slide that they've had has corresponded with DeMar DeRozan being out. And
well, sure.
Once they get DeMar back, I still think Toronto's got the second most talent after the Cavs in the East. It's a question of whether or not they can be healthy enough to figure that out. It's ironic that I think the last game of the season for the Cavs is Cavs Raptors, and
maybe it'll come down to that. Who knows? But I doubt it.
Yeah, it might. But odds are it'll be backup guys playing for for both teams. But it's which maybe the Raptors will finally get their first win against the Cavs this year. So,
that's good. So anything you want to pitch as we kind of wrap this up, because it's getting a little long in the tooth?
Yeah. What I got to pitch this week? There was something I was going to pitch. I don't know. Do you have anything to pitch? Let me think.
So I've been watching The Expanse on Prime, which is a fun sci-fi show. And it was on Sci-Fi Network, and they just put the first season out on Prime, and now the second season's on Sci-Fi. A lot of fun. 10 episodes, not a huge commitment. Part of the reason this got picked up from a series of novels and turned into a TV series was that George R. R. Martin was a big fan, so it kind of takes place a few hundred years in the future, and it's all about Earth versus Mars versus, you know, colonists out in the solar system.
Sure.
You know, big political. It a lot of people call it Game of Thrones in space. So, I've enjoyed it. It's pretty well done. The production values are much better than a lot of other sci-fi shows. So I've enjoyed that. And then I just finished up, Man in the High Castle second season.
Oh, nice.
Which was phenomenal. Really, really well done.
Yeah.
They've created a very chilling world. Is all I can say. I mean, it's not any one thing you can pin down on that show, but the set designs and just the whole feel of the show is very, very chilling in kind of a fun yet harrowing way. So
yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I'm excited for this weekend, not because of 50 Shades Darker, which whatever. I'm excited two of the movies I've been looking forward to really since the beginning of the year after the, you know, kind of the holiday season. John Wick 2 comes out, and the Lego Batman movie, which I think is going to be amazing. So
you were you a bit, well, and you know, we have one of the themes of some of
every,
the opinions of our
everything readers, is awesome.
Everything is awesome. So maybe there's a version of that. I love the first Lego movie, so I'm hoping Lego Batman's a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
So. Well,
another game tomorrow. We'll see who plays. Yeah. Maybe it'll only be, you know, it'll be Kay Felder, DeAndre Liggins,
and
Kyle Korver,
maybe.
And maybe Jordan Farmar. Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't be, we know it won't be Lance Stevenson.
Yeah. Lance's dances is not going to be in the building. So,
yep.
Okay. Right. Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.